Welcome to Let's Grow. This is a personal development podcast, and I'm your host, Jeremy A. Taylor, but you can call me JT. Whether it's a short message from yours truly or an interview with a special guest, this is your place for weekly encouragement to keep going and growing. My goal here is simple, to leave you better than I found you. And I know your time is valuable, so let's dive right in.
Let's Grow podcast family. Welcome back. This is JT. Excited to introduce you guys to another friend today on the podcast. Whether this is your first time listening or you've been here through 40 plus episodes, I certainly appreciate your time. This is your place for a shot of encouragement, real conversations, real people designed to help you grow, get better, nothing more, nothing less. We just want to bless you. We just want to help you grow along your journey. And I'm excited to introduce you guys to a friend today by the name of Miss Julie Harris. Julie, thanks for hanging out with me today.
Thanks for inviting me to hang out with you today. I always enjoy spending time with you, whether it's leadership training or listening to you speak or just having a chat. So I'm grateful to be here.
Thanks, Julie. Yes, speaking of having a chat, we were supporting our good friend, Mayor Alan Keck, just last night at a local fundraising event. He has announced his candidacy for governor, to run for the governor of the state. So we were chopping it up last night, having some fun conversation. That was a good time as well. Julie, before we go any further, I'd love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about yourself. Julie, I got to know Julie through working with the city of Somerset, the town that I live in. Julie serves as a communications director. She's got some other roles as well in our community. I'm sure she'll share about that, of course. And I'll ask some intentional questions. We'll talk about it. But I'm just a big fan of Julie Harris because she's intentional about how she shares the story of where we live and the work that she does. She's so polished, but I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm excited. But Julie, tell everybody a little bit about yourself so we know who Julie Harris is.
Sure. I am the, as you mentioned, the communications director for the city of Somerset, but also a communications consultant for the Somerset Pulaski Economic Development Authority. So I have kind of a dual role here and have a super fun job telling the rest of the world how cool of a place Somerset is and all of the awesome things that are happening in it. And I get to be a part of the event team here and putting together the festivals that we have downtown and groundbreaking events and that sort of thing. So that's what I do day in and day out. But I also am in our community, the president of the Master Musicians Festival, which is a huge passion of mine. Big music buff, music fan, and I love this festival, and it is definitely a passion project for me. So I am married and have three children, 16 and 11-year-old twins, boy-girl twins, and I have lived in Somerset on and off since I was 8 years old. So this is home to me. I graduated from Somerset High School, graduated also from the University of Kentucky, so I'm a Kentucky girl through and through, and I'm happy to be back in my community using my skills to help it grow.
Speaking of those skills, Julie, when did you know, or how did this type of work get on your radar? From a journalism perspective, utilizing your gift to write, to tell stories, how did you even find yourself in this field?
Well, as you mentioned, I did graduate with a journalism degree, and I spent 10 years in community newspapers, which is something that I've been around since day one of life. My dad is a newspaper editor, a retired newspaper editor, and when we lived here in Somerset, he owned a weekly newspaper when I was growing up. So I made the decision to go into journalism thinking that that's where I would stay. And I spent several years there. And in 2008, when the economy started to decline and things for newspapers weren't going so great, I was spending a lot of hours working with a toddler. I decided that I needed to make a shift. And I knew I had taken public relations and marketing classes in college as part of my journalism degree. And I knew about the industry, but I decided to take the leap at that point to move over into public relations. And I really didn't have any experience. My training was in journalism. I knew how to write and knew how to tell stories and do that from a news perspective, but it really was a learning curve for me to kind of make a shift into how to utilize storytelling for the benefit of an organization's image and ensuring that organization is successful. So I've spent since 2009 on this side of that role, but I still use my journalism training every single day. It has been absolutely helpful to me in every way, in journalism and in public relations and marketing. So
that's a good point, Julie, there on the back end of you still use some of that formal training that you had in journalism with what you currently do today. And you know, the same can be said for myself, as in, because I think when folks see people make a shift or make an adjustment, in your case, you're still utilizing in large part what you quote unquote went to school for. But a lot of folks looked at me when I left teaching and coaching and they said, well, man, you're no longer using your degree. Well, that's not true. Mm-hmm. I'm still utilizing a lot of the skills, a lot of the concepts, a lot of the same approach that I had in the classroom with teaching and coaching and the public education sector with communicating and connecting with people now, just in a different capacity. So I like how you shared that, Julie, because a lot of times, you know, we don't realize how things have added up over time to help set us up for success or to be able to, or to be equipped to do what we do now until we look back and see, wow, I see now how that was setting me up for this or that decision or even that setback or those struggles. And we'll actually talk about some of those as well here in a few minutes. You mentioned Master Musician Festival a minute ago, that you're a music junkie. We were chatting about this last night also, Julie. I honestly think with as chill and as quiet and as laid back as you are, if people didn't know this side of you, they would have no clue, right?
Yeah, that's true.
If they saw you in the day-to-day operations of the job, public relations, right, communications director, they would never know that Julie Harris has a passion for music. And it's so cool to see you plug some of those things on social media, because that shares some of your personality that a lot of people don't get exposed to, right, in your day-to-day ops. And so where did this love of music come from? And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about how you ended up tied to MMF. But last night you even shared like some of the first concerts and festivals that you went to. So feel free to share some of that, Julie.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't remember a time that I didn't love music. I mean, whether I was listening to, Mariah Carey on cassette tape or Aerosmith on CD, or, you know, like I have always just been a huge fan, because I think for me, music is a way to express feelings that you're having about life. I mean, mm-hmm. it is an expression of, you know, if you are having trouble in a relationship, there's a whole genre of music that relates to that. If you want to just get up and get energized and get pumped and dance, there's a whole genre of music for that. It's just like you can find something for your day, no matter what. And there are so many different types of music, so many different, I mean, I certainly have things that I relate to, but I also love exploring different kinds of music. Music is art, and it's a beautiful expression of emotion, and it's a way for people to connect with a feeling or with each other. And so I think that's why I love music so much. It just makes me feel good no matter what. So, but I think I got that from my dad, too. He also loves music and, has introduced me to a lot of artists that he loves. And, my dad was in 1994 on the, founding board of directors for the Master Musicians Festival. So 1993, I guess I should say. We're getting ready to celebrate our 30th year of this festival. And so when I was in high school, my dad was helping form this this festival, which has a mission of bringing music excellence to rural Kentucky at an affordable price. Yeah. And that has remained the mission of this nonprofit organization for 30 years. And that is really something that we all of us who, the 13 volunteer board members who put this together along with our executive director, we all feel very passionately about that. Music is something that everyone should get to experience no matter where you live or what your situation in life is. So yeah. Our goal is to make sure that we help people experience that that very artistic, emotional thing that connects us.
Yeah, I've been in Somerset since 2016, and I had heard of MMF and I'd seen images online over the course of the past few years, but really had no idea, honestly, how big of an event it actually is until I went 2 years ago. And I remember thinking to myself, man, it's middle of the summer, it's going to be hot. You know, I'm sure there'll be a lot of people out there. I don't know what to expect. I'm not really a festival junkie by any stretch of the imagination. You know, is it going to be some of those images that you see online? People are out there hippied out, barefoot, right? Camping. What to expect? I didn't know what to expect. And I was unbelievably surprised at the different genres of music that was available. I was surprised at the number of people that were in Somerset, Kentucky for that type of event, because, you know, growing up here and being from Kentucky, like myself, born and raised Central Kentucky, Campbellsville, Kentucky, you know, we still think about this as small town USA, right? But of course that's changing, especially in Somerset, because of what's happening downtown. And we'll get to that here in just a little bit, but I can remember that I had an absolute blast. And, you know, I'll never forget going to that first MMF with my family, taking Jayla, taking Miles, spending time with people, with friendships that I had forged since I've been here. Because I can remember when I first moved here thinking to myself, man, I don't know anybody. Like, I'm literally moving to a new town. I don't have any friends. I got to find some people who will like me. So I was just thinking to myself, like, man, I've gotten to know all these people, and this is super cool. This is just one other thing about Somerset that I love. And so, Julie, before we dive into a few other questions, I do want to ask this, bouncing from the music to the journalism and, and the position that you're in now. You mentioned there, you gave a simple plug, and this is really the nature of your work. You said, we want to bring the excellence of music to Somerset, Kentucky at an affordable price. Yep. What, you know, that's really the nature of the work that you do, is communicating ideas like that so that people know what to expect. People know what they're getting into, and people know how to share that story with others. So how do you doing the work you do, how do you settle in on that type of idea and communicate that vision?
Gosh, that's a loaded question. I mean, I there's no magic formula for me necessarily. But I have been recently inspired by, recently being maybe for the last five years, by a colleague introduced me to Simon Sinek and his TED Talk, How Great Leaders Inspire Action. And it was kind of a revolutionary 18 minutes for me. And I go back and try to watch it once a year, every year. But I was trained as a journalist to communicate in the way that most people communicate. And that's what he describes, which is from the outside in. Very broadly, the what, then the how, then the why. So you're taught in journalism school, inverted pyramid, stay broad, and then you can get more specific.
That's good. Yep.
But his argument is, his theory is that the way to inspire people and the way to create change is to communicate from the inside out. And so you need to start with your why. Yeah. And your why is really your story, right? Mm. It is why we're here doing this. What we believe, and then how we go about doing it.
Yeah.
And so
the what informs the how.
Exactly. Or
the why informs
the how, which then informs the what.
Yeah.
And so he in that TED talk, he talks about brands like Apple or leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. who communicate in this way and have ultimately been successful in getting people to either buy or engage or follow along. And so that to me was that was kind of it fundamentally changed the way that I started communicating in the role that I'm in, because if we're communicating our why, and for a Mastery Musicians Festival, the why is that we are passionate about music and we want to bring it to other people. We really want to do that, but we want to bring it to everybody, not just people who can afford to buy an expensive ticket. And so and it's challenging because our natural instinct, I don't think, is to start with the why. Our natural instinct is as marketers is to start with the what. So you have to force yourself into that. But in everything that I communicate, I want to start with that why. And for me, at the City of Somerset, it has been awesome to work for a mayor who also believed in the why. His the every everything that he has been able to influence and accomplish here has started with the idea that in Somerset we need to be telling our story more, and we need to be celebrating who we are, not apologizing for what we're not, and telling the world about it. And when we do, people are going to see that and they're going to want to be a part of it. Well, look what happened. We started doing that in 2019, and that happened. And so we are like we are proof of Simon Sinek's theory that if you start communicating with that why, people are going to see it and they're going to want to be a part of it. And so with everything that I do, I really try to start there. And for things that I love, like MMF, that's pretty easy because we're just so passionate about it.
But I love how this approach ties a purpose and a method to the passion. That what's happened in Somerset, Kentucky has been, there are inevitably going to be some things that you can't script. There's going to be some results that happen, some residual effects that compound over time that you can't possibly predict. But at the end of the day, much of what of the majority of the direction that you guys have gone in has been calculated, period. And that's the beauty of it, and I love what you shared because, Julie, part of my tagline, and the work that I do is I want to help people grow at work and in life, right? Helping people grow at work and in life. The reason why I began with work in that tagline was because I realized work is such a huge part of our identity in the Western culture, Western society, and in America because of how much time we invest in our work. And that's another conversation for another day. But I also want people to know that it's not just about growing and developing at work, it's about growing and developing in all of your positions and capacities in life, because whenever you do that, ultimately it's going to affect your work. And the thing that you shared, Julie, what I love about this is people can take what you mentioned here about storytelling and communicating a vision and sharing your passion and starting with the why. That can be applied in the home as well, right? Sharing the story of your family, communicating the values that are consistent with how you want to the culture that you want to create inside your home, the culture that you want to create at work, right? All these different things. So this isn't just specific to the work that Julie does, listeners. This is a plug. That's one of those things that can help you at work and in life. Before I plug a few other questions here, Julie, and we learn a little bit more about your work, and you share some pearls that can help people grow and develop in their respective industries. I do want to ask you this. You mentioned a cassette and DVD a few minutes ago. Do you remember the first DVD you ever owned? Do you remember? Or I meant CD. So, sorry, I meant CD. Do you happen to remember or any of those from back in the day? God, man, kids today have no idea what it's like to have a big old binder full of CDs, right?
Right. I still have them because I cannot stand to get rid of them. So they're tucked away. The first one I ever had, you remember those subscription services where you could get like Columbia House or whatever it was called, where you could get 10 CDs for a cent? And man, I really ate that up. The one that comes to mind most, honestly, is I don't know if it was my first, but Aerosmith's greatest hits
Yeah.
CD. And I listened to it over and over and over and over. I think I had a Kenny G CD too in that bunch. But the one that comes to mind first is Aerosmith.
Nice. The very first CD I can remember owning was Slow Jam by Usher.
Nice.
Yeah. And on that note, since we were talking last night about concerts and festivals, I have technically only been to one concert in my life, and it was a Usher and Trey Songz concert. And Jeremiah opened up, and this was at the time when the R&B artist Jeremiah was like basically brand new. Trey Songz was like wildly popular at this time. This was back in like 2010-ish, 11-ish. And listen, I'm telling a terrible story on myself here, but I was coaching at Warren East High School. We were in a Christmas tournament at Franklin Simpson. I'd purchased tickets to this Usher and Trey Songz concert in Nashville at Bridgestone for my brother for Christmas, for me and him to go together. And it just so happened that it fell on the night of one of the Christmas games, one of the tournament games that we had. And so we were traveling to Franklin Simpson and then back to Bowling Green each day of the tournament. Well, I think it was either the second or third game, we got thumped. I'm talking just pounded that night. You know, my first year coaching, it was tough. It was challenging. I really don't want to rehash it. The game ended. I knocked out the post game speech. Keep your head up. We'll get our first win soon. Who knows? Maybe in the near future. But the girls headed back with their parents. I hopped in my car, hit back roads down to Nashville. We walked in right as Trey Songz was coming out. Countdown 5, 4, because we were going to be late. The traffic was crazy. And I was like, man, we're going to miss half the concert. We literally walked through the breezeway to our seats when the countdown hit 0 and Trey Songz walked out, and it was nuts. And I remember singing every lyric to every Usher song from my childhood.
That's it. That is it. That's like those are the memories. People connect with music in that way. I love that.
And listen, I was there was a song he was getting ready to sing, and Usher said, packed house, it was crazy. And he said, I need somebody to come up on stage with me. And like, I don't know what happened, but like this fangirl thing just like went, and I was like, and I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? What just happened? Like, I literally just lost my mind.
Oh, that is fat. Well, did you get to go up on stage?
I did not, and
Oh.
thankfully I didn't, because it was an inappropriate exhibition with a very sensual song that I needed no part of. And so all that to be said, though, I'll never forget that experience. But yeah, that was fun times. First CD ever, only concert I've ever been to. I'm trying to get Jayla to go to some concerts, but she just, I don't think it, she's told me before that it's just not her vibe. But like, I don't know, but we'll see.
I get that. I think that I will say now, having been to several festivals, I prefer a festival environment than a concert environment. I love to go see both, but I do like to go for 2 days and just hear as much music as I can for 2 days, as opposed to going for 2 hours, unless it's Dave Matthews Band, who is my all-time favorite, and I will go anywhere, anytime to see them that I possibly can. So I've seen them at a festival and I've seen them in a Bridgestone. So, but it's definitely, some people just like to experience their music in a car when nobody is around. They don't necessarily want to see it live, or, and that's cool too. Just all on how you want to take it.
Totally. Julie, have any of the kiddos adopted your love of music as well?
Yes, my son, Matthew, our oldest, he plays the guitar. Over COVID, he taught himself through YouTube how to play. So yeah, he just came up one. I mean, I knew he was doing it in his room, but he came up one night and he started playing Dave Matthews for me, and I was like, whoa, what is happening?
Oh my God, my first child is now playing a guitar, picking on a guitar and playing my favorite music. Man, I bet you just melted.
I did. He can play so well now. He got an electric guitar for Christmas last year, and This year, actually, you know, Somerset Schools has their high school has really solid homecoming traditions, and the classes build floats. And this year, the theme was there was a music theme. I can't remember exactly what it was, but the junior class float was an Elvis float. And so when it went through the parade, Matthew got to sit on it with his guitar and play Elvis songs as they went through the parade. And so he has really latched on. He's got a very, very cool taste in music. But he's kind of digging in. He likes music a lot.
That's awesome. Young people, man, that's a nice plug. Two plugs. One, Matthew knows how to win his mom's heart. And two, a reminder that you can learn how to do anything on YouTube, anything. Yes. I really think that there's a lot of people who don't understand just how big of a now, granted, just as much of a resource and a blessing it is. It can also be a tool that traps people, right? And creates bad habits and develops a toxic mindset. But man, when used properly, there's so many resources out there online. Would you agree?
I totally agree. Social media is the best of us and the worst of us, truly. But in the best category, connecting with people and learning things and information, just the sheer availability of information to people these days is certainly in the plus category for social media.
Totally. And along those lines, that's a perfect segue into the next question that I have for you, Julie. You know, with the art of storytelling, with communicating ideas and the vision of the organizations that you are a part of, why is storytelling so important? I know you talked about strategy a second ago, but why is storytelling so important? And, you know, the social media plug there, Does that help? Does that expedite your ability to reach people, connect with people, or what kind of challenges does it present in your line of work? I know that's a two-part question there, so don't be afraid to take your time on unpacking it.
Well, we'll start with why storytelling is important, and I think going back to Simon Sinek's TED Talk, the kind of the takeaway from that message for me is people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. Mm. And they are going to do business with people who believe what they believe.
Sure.
So the only way to communicate to people what you believe and what your story is and why they should engage with you is through storytelling. It's through talking about the beginnings of a business or the way that you believe in dealing with people or treating people or what inspires you. Those things are your why behind why you're doing anything that you do. And so you have to tell those stories to get that across. And more specifically, telling anecdotes about things that have happened to you. That's just a really strong way of connecting with people. People want to read things that they can relate to.
Sure.
And so I'm telling stories in that way is super important and really
something
powerful.
Something else to plug there, Julie, that came to mind as you were sharing that is, you know, as a speaker, trainer, and coach, someone once told me, a mentor said, facts tell, but stories sell.
Yes.
And that was so good. Like, so like an example maybe would be, I could be off base here, but like you and I both know that there are statistics and research that has proven that the more time families spend eating together, example being like eating dinner together at the dinner table, the healthier the relationships, the healthier maybe the relationship that kids form with food, so forth and so on. Now we know that we could throw out numbers all day long and we could show what happens for people's lives and the consistency of positive things that unfold, but communicating that through storytelling would be like showing someone what that looks like and why that matters versus just putting a graphic online that shows numbers and statistics.
For sure. Well, the example that comes to mind to me most recently was in my desire to communicate to the community just before the last election, why it was so important for everyone to who lived in the city to vote for Mayor Keck. And
sure.
that to me took the form of a story of being in a coffee shop and having an interaction with someone who's from Texas, but who's retired and lives here on and off during yeah. the year, and them telling me what they were seeing in the community. And to me, that story was the perfect example of I could tell people why all day long,
yeah.
but if they hear it through that form, I think they can engage more and they can relate more. It's all about relating to people, right?
Yeah, totally.
So, that's the way that you do that, I think.
Sure, sure. And I remember that post that you shared, and man, that was heartfelt, and it was spot on, and it was timely, just like you said. As far as speaking of that post and social media, what are some of the challenges that are presented through your line of work, Julie? I mean, no matter what you put out there, you know, people are going to attack certain ideas. There's going to be opposition. There's just going to be people who use social media as a way to abuse the right and responsibility that they have with their voice. So how do you guys navigate that through your line of work, and what's challenging about social media and in your position?
It is probably the most challenging part of my job.
Sure.
Certainly you have to communicate there because it's where the people are, right? You need yeah. to go where those people are. And so communicating on all those platforms is really important, especially for a government agency, because it's the quickest and the quickest way to reach the most people right now. But to your point, it has become challenging and at times dangerous tool when it comes to information. And I was reading an article in The Atlantic that was forwarded to me by a good friend, Forrest Spillman, about social media and about how this writer was surmising that social media is dying. I don't know that I'm there yet, that I believe that it's happening that quickly, but he yeah. was talking about how social media, the transition from social networking, which is what it was intended to be,
yeah.
connecting with people and sharing and celebrating life, to social media, which is this a platform for communication.
Yeah, and an onslaught of advertisement.
Yes, yes. And so it suddenly overnight became this way that anybody could become a journalist per se and disseminate any kind of information that they want to disseminate. And so the biggest challenge is simply the misinformation that comes from it and the negativity that it can create. And so I take my responsibility with social media really seriously as it relates to the city and SPEDA and any organization that I'm communicating with, and ensuring that we're communicating correct, true, positive information that is, that is our responsibility.
Yeah.
And so, but not everyone sees that responsibility. And I continue to be floored by the number of people who will take information at face value on social media. And that's how, it's like that game of telephone, you know, communication can break down as it goes down the line. And what you started off saying, something becomes completely different. But I really cannot stress to people enough how important it is to make sure that the information that you're sharing and the information that you're consuming is true and factual. And the only way to do that is second source it. We have a second source mm-hmm. rule in our home. My husband and I both feel very strongly about making sure the kids, when they're engaging with information online, they bring it to us, and maybe it's made them mad or they're curious about it. We always say to them, did you second source that? Did you go find that somewhere else? Because you need to make sure that what you're reading is accurate and that you can trust it.
That's a great plug, man. That's very valuable. That's great, because obviously children need direction, and they need someone to help them navigate all of the social media exposure, for sure.
It's so much. Like, can you think what your life would have been like in high school if this was in your face all the time? Like, I struggle with it as a 43-year-old, and
Yeah.
I know my kids struggle with it, and it's really hard to ensure that they're not being left out, because everybody's doing it, right? But
Yeah.
also to protect them and to ensure that the information that they're taking in is accurate, and that they know how to interact with people without hurting or being negative or anything. So it's a struggle for sure, but it can be, social media can be positive and powerful when it's used the right way. It's just that we've given this really powerful tool to everyone, and including kids, and including people who maybe don't understand the responsibility that is required of it. And so how to navigate that is a daily struggle.
Sure. Julie, you fashion a lot of content, and much of that is calculated with a timetable on when maybe the city or SPEDA is going to make announcements. When events and promoting events, making important announcements, so forth and so on, and then of course you head up projects as far as telling story through video and so forth and so on, and helping to manage events and so forth and so on. There's a lot that goes into your work, Julie. But how do you fashion your day to be as productive as possible? What would you share with our listeners that you think sets you up for success? To fashion the content that you do on a consistent basis.
I have learned about myself that I am most effective as a writer when I'm in a quiet space, and it's the first part of my day. So when I need to write, I'm most effective when I get up and I'm writing by 5 a.m. with a cup of coffee and a quiet house, and to usually a dog laying next to me. It's just it's my time to be productive there, because I know once I get into the office, inevitably email and things that come up at the last minute are going to serve as distractions. So if I really need to hone in on what the content is and make sure that I feel solid about it, then I need to be doing that at 5 a.m. in a quiet space.
Good stuff.
So that is the one thing that I do for myself to make sure that I get that done. I'm not religious with it by any means, but some days it's just really hard to get up that early. But I do my best, especially when I know I need to write.
Yeah, well, that's good. The self-awareness to know that this is when I operate best. This is how to create boundaries and create margin to allow myself to do that. That's good. Julie, do you feel as if there's been any mistakes you've made along the way? And if so, do any come to mind? And what maybe you learn about yourself or about your profession through some of those trials or struggles?
Yeah, absolutely. Like every day. I mean, I make mistakes all the time. And I think probably the ones that have made the biggest difference for me are the ones that have taught me how to relate with people and build relationships and what works and what doesn't. And I have learned maybe through in managing people and man and serving on boards and groups with other people who have different perspectives or personalities, that the way that you think things need to go at that time aren't really how they should go. And the way that you handle certain situations as it relates to people and their actions, maybe isn't always the best. And so I have learned, trial by fire, I guess, that I really need to think through and make sure that I am not reacting emotionally to things. So that's really hard for me. But to ensure that I'm protecting it, those relationships and making sure that they're most effective. So those are the biggest learning lessons that I have had in any job that I've ever had, is just in how to best relate with people and make sure that you're treating them with respect and dignity, and ultimately getting to the end goal. And I haven't always done that the right way.
Sure.
So I have learned some pretty important lessons.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing that, Julia. What advice would you give someone who's maybe late teens, 20 something, early 20 something, who sees themselves maybe doing some of the work that you're doing? What kind of advice would you offer them as they move in that direction or try to put themselves in a position to tell stories and communicate concepts the way that you do?
Intern, intern, intern. Find a place to go and practice. And it doesn't matter if you've never done it before. I used to be so afraid to ask when I was younger to get in there and ask to do things or ask questions. I was always afraid that I was not going to know the answer and I was going to be embarrassed by that. And I tell my kids always just jump in and ask questions. People are going to help you. Don't be afraid to take on an internship where you're doing something that you think you might want to do, but it's completely new. So go find, if you want to create content, go find someone in your community that's creating content and find a way to shadow them or intern with them. The schools have great co-op and internship programs that you can be a part of. And some of my I've had interns in that capacity since I started my professional career, and some of the interns that worked with in high school during that time are now working places like Adidas Corporate, and they're creating content for Adidas, and it's super cool to watch. But they got started early, 16 years old. They were coming into a newsroom to see how it works and to learn. So
I mean,
just like be a sponge.
who would have thought years ago that we would be in the space that we're in and we would have all this social media exposure and whatnot and companies trying to utilize it to gain an edge, a competitive edge on their competitors and connect with folks who aren't in their physical locale, if you will. Reaching people that they never thought they'd be able to reach, which then opens up this whole other world of people being able to come alongside them and create and be content creators, right?
Oh.
Like Instagram reels and TikToks and infographics and writing out their Facebook post and so forth and so on and managing their social media profiles. Isn't that crazy? Like people can literally make thousands of dollars going to a company and saying, "Hey, do you need a social media content creator? Because I would love to work with you."
Yeah, or do you need me to promote your brand as an influencer?
Yeah, affiliate
Even
influencer.
the influencer thing is fascinating to me. I mean, there are influencers for everything, it seems like. And I'm a sucker for all of it. Like I scroll through Instagram and I want to know what outfits I can buy for cheap that are cute at Target, and I want to know what hair products I need, and I mean, it's just like this constant barrage of truly how to live your life. Like where can you go to get things that you like? And it's all about trying to relate to people again. But it's mind-boggling. I mean, when I started in newspapers in 2001 professionally, the way you advertised was radio, in print, whether that's magazine or newspaper, and TV. That was it. And that just got flipped on its head with social media. It's so much more affordable. You reach so many more people in a targeted way. What we can do with technology now blows my mind. That we can put a invisible fence around a music festival and say anybody who attended this music festival, when they walk out of that invisible fence, I want to deliver them an ad for my music festival for the next 30 days just because they were there with their phone. Blowing to me.
Totally. Well, Julie, today's been a fun conversation. I'm gonna close down by asking you a couple of fun questions just off the cuff, but just to firm things up here, so people understand, or people can be reminded of a few takeaways from our conversation today. We talked about your work telling stories. You shared a little bit about what sets you up to be as productive as possible. What are some of the challenges that comes with social media and managing that as well? But I love how you shared starting with why and those lessons that you learned from Simon Sinek, and talking about that people do business with people that they can connect and share similar values, people that they know, like, and trust. And that's the importance of storytelling. Is there anything else, Julie, before we work to close down, that you would like to plug on storytelling and the nature of your work?
I don't think so. I just think I encourage, if you're listening to this and you're curious, definitely Google Simon Sinek and how great leaders inspire action, and spend 18 minutes of your life checking that out and seeing how it can apply to what you do, because no matter what you do, I'll tell this really quick story I think that's all. But when I started college, I was a mechanical engineering major because I happened to be good at math, and because my dad told me if I went into being a writer, I wasn't going to make any money. And so I decided to be an engineering major, and I was taking an English class, and I had to write a paper about how I would use writing in my career. And I went to interview one of my mechanical engineering professors, and he said, "Well, it's not. You're not gonna write." And I said, "Well, okay, well, that's it. I'm done." And called my dad and said, "Dad, I've got to change majors. Like, I can't. I have to write."
Yeah. But
the truth is, it actually does. It plays into every single role, every single professional role that you can have in some way, shape, or fashion, whether it's communicating with internally with your coworkers, externally with your audience, whoever that is that's engaging with your company, or it's communicating on a really personal level with family or friends. You are going to use that in some way. And so,
and even the story we tell ourselves.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Yep. The story we tell ourselves is
the way that we process our own life.
Yeah. So it's going to play a role in your life. And if you can kind of embrace it, I think you're going to connect with people in a much different, more meaningful way. And so if you're not embracing storytelling, go listen to that TED Talk and see how you can bring that into your workplace or your life.
Totally. Thank you for sharing that, Julie. As we close down, Julie, if you're hitting the treadmill or you're pounding the pavement today, going for a run, what's on Julie's playlist?
A little bit of everything. Pearl Jam, Jay-Z.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Post Malone. Metallica. Chris Stapleton.
Nice. Yeah. I mean,
you just really never know what's going to come up on that playlist.
That's awesome. Julie, how early is too early to start listening to Christmas music?
Oh gosh, how early is too?
Or are you like my wife and think it's okay to listen to it year round?
No, I can't do it. I think Thanksgiving is when it's allowed to start in my brain. This Mixmas and the November 1st, when they start doing that, I can't.
Yeah. Good stuff. And if there's a song or an album or an artist that reminds you of high school, what comes to mind?
High school. Probably Tupac.
Nice. Nice.
Quick
little plug here. I got in trouble listening to a Tupac song one time whenever I was little. Now, I wasn't the one that put it in the CD player. My stepdad, you know, he listened to a lot of hip hop and R&B back in the day. And so we're going to play basketball one day. And that's back whenever you had CD players, and some of them, when you hit a bump, they'd skip. You remember that? Oh, yeah. And so I'm in the back seat singing a Tupac song back there, killing it. And then we hit the bump and the CD skips right in the middle of a cuss word. And I just keep rolling right through the cuss word. And he's like, "I'm telling you, Mom, when you get home and you're getting in trouble." I'm like, "How am I getting in trouble when if the music was playing, you'd have never heard it? Number two, you're the adult in this relationship and you're playing the music that's impacting my upbringing," right? It was crazy, but That's awesome, Tupac. When I think back around high school, I remember listening to a lot of Jay-Z. Jay-Z was my guy back then. That's good
I do
stuff.
love Jay-Z, but definitely the high school years were a lot of California Love
Oh,
and
yeah.
okay. So the last Super Bowl was heaven for me. I just like everybody be quiet. I need to soak all of this in because that was high school for me for sure.
Julie, today has been fun. I always enjoy our conversations, whether it be at the office, in the community. I've enjoyed working alongside of you on projects here in the city to add value to our community. You're just the best. You're a jewel. You're excellent at what you do. You care about what you do because you care about people. And I really think people who want to do great work and communicate the vision of their company or their organization, they should pay attention to the content that you share through SPEDA in the city of Somerset because you're an absolute professional. So thank you. Thank you for today, Julie.
Gosh, thank you, Jeremy. That is very kind, and I don't deserve that. But I love working with you too, and I always appreciate the inspiration that you bring to the room, whether it's in a speaking engagement or just out on the street at a festival. So thank you for always being so supportive of our work and cheering us on, and we appreciate it so much. So
Yes,
thank you.
ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, folks, I hope you got some value for your time. Matter of fact, I'm not going to say I hope. I know you did. And so make sure you share this episode with a friend. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to introduce my friend Julie to you today. Remember this, don't just go through life, grow through life, and everybody can encourage somebody. And I'll catch you on the next episode, guys. Take care.
Hey, thanks again for listening in. If you enjoyed this episode and you received some value, could you do me a favor and share it with a friend? If so, I really, really, really appreciate you helping me get the word out about this podcast. As a reminder, this is your place for a shot of encouragement, and my goal is to simply leave you better than I found you. So, my friend, I certainly hope that was the case for you today.